I'm Jeremy Greer.
I'm Chris Mosier.
This is Non-Human Biologics, the creepy but necessary podcast that brings back old characters just to kind of spook you out a little bit. And we're back with more chat about the X-Files. How are you today, Chris?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm actually doing very well. Things are good in the life of
Fantastic.
Jeremy right now. Let's not say good. Like, I feel like if I, like, as a guy with cancer, maybe good is a stretch, but I'm feeling good for a guy with cancer. How about that?
Sure.
It's a weird response, but I feel like I need to be.
As a guy with tummy aches, I'm just all right.
You're just all right. So it's the same kind of vibe, right? Like, we're as good as we can possibly be with our individual ailments. So
that's
I just feel the need to be honest with you, Chris. That was what was going on.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about some X-Files. Toombs is back.
Yeah, I actually was surprised by this. I knew he came back at some point, but I didn't know it was the same season.
I was surprised as well when I saw the episode name was just Toombs. I feel like that's a little.
Oh, sure. Yeah, is that the name of the episode?
It's just Toombs. Yeah, the name of the episode
is. I didn't look, just press play.
Yeah. Like, I can't wait for season 2, episode 7, which is just Mulder. It's going to be very funny.
Is that real? Is that really just called Mulder?
No, I have no idea. I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
Although, I will say, like, we're going to get into it a lot in this episode, but I will say, this feels like so much of a repeat of the first episode, just with some added seasoning on it, that I was kind of bored through some of this. Like, I've seen these spooks before, and I wasn't into more of the same spooks, I guess.
And I wonder if they brought him back, what the schedule would have looked like if he was so popular, or that episode was so popular when it aired, that and then like a couple months later, they're like, okay, we've reworked this in. I don't really know how this stuff works or if it was always planned. It is retreading old ground for the first time, really. But it does now kind of like recenter what could be a struggle for the next couple episodes, which is like, we might shut down the X-Files because Merle's really in the spotlight on this.
That's kind of the B plot of this whole thing, which is good. That's the part of the episode that I like the most, I think. Before we get majorly into this, let's thank our patrons over at patreon.com/monster of the week. They donate a small amount of money every month to get episodes of this podcast early, access to our extremely cool Discord server, where we can talk about things like shipping and Gunpla and Gundam. And then we can also get a bunch of exclusive podcasts. So please go check all of that stuff out. Chris, what has been happening on the X-Files?
I will tell you one second. I think we need a UFO research channel in the Discord. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Chris, I have bad news. I was rejected from guesting on the UFO the UFO podcast that I requested to be on. I told you I joined all of these weird Facebook groups because I was getting real into this, and like a guy posted like looking for guests, and I was like, hey, I'm a podcaster. Like, let's hook up. Let's do the thing. And he's like, I'm really just looking for people with like stories to tell. And I'm like, I could just make up some. I thought very, very seriously about just making up some bullshit to be on this podcast, but I thought also that's not fair to do to this guy who's like trying to live his best life.
It's your pride as a UFO hunter wouldn't let you do it.
Wouldn't let me do it. Yeah, I can. I'm only going to talk about stories that I've actually seen. I'm the Mulder of this shit, of this podcast game.
Okay. Last time on the X-Files, Mulder and Scully found themselves stranded deep in the woods while investigating a series of disappearances. Not only do they find themselves running low on power, with no ride out, but they are soon surrounded by ancient insects that will kill them if they go into the dark. In the end, they manage to barely escape with their lives. Then it's just time to go back to work like nothing happened.
It's true. Just going right back to the FBI.
All right, sure.
We're covering season 1, episode 21 of the X-Files, entitled Toombs. Eugene Toombs, the genetic mutant, is released from the sanatorium, and Mulder becomes personally involved to ensure that he is caught in the act of getting the last human liver he needs to go into hibernation. This aired on April 22nd, 1994, was written by Glenn Morgan, James Wong, and directed by Dave Nutter. Some notable guest appearances here. We always have to call out our Supernatural faves. Daddy Campbell is here. Pileggi.
Pileggi. I can finally use this great promo shot I have of him and saved on my phone for the podcast art.
Finally. Absolutely finally. We're going to mix it up besides Mulder and Scully, huh? We're finally going to do someone, a third guy.
Somebody else in the mix.
I know from... So I spend a little bit of time on Tumblr nowadays, and I've been retweeting a lot of X-Files fan art. You guys can go check us out at Monster of the Week Podcast on Tumblr if you want to go see that for some reason. Skinner is a fan fave. There's a lot of people
that... Yeah, he's one of my favorites when I watched, for sure.
There's a lot of people that ship him and Mulder together, which I find very interesting since this is the first time we've met him. But we're going to start the episode in Druid Hill Sanitarium in Bodymore, Murderland. Shout-outs to Baltimore, who had a fucking terrible day yesterday. I don't know if you saw
it. I cannot believe that, dude.
Man, I saw that footage first thing this morning, and it was, like, just fucking devastated. Like, I can't imagine...
That shit was scary to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Just for, I guess, for context, for people who are listening to this in the future, this is the week that... This is the day that a boat crashed into one of the bridges in Baltimore, and just fucking the whole thing collapsed into the river. Like, the entire bridge just dropped on this ship, and it's insane footage that they've got to see it. And like, they, like, the boat managed to, like, get some communication out, so they were able to, like, save some lives by stopping traffic to go on the bridge, but, like, still some cars are trying to be found. I think there's six people they haven't located yet. It's insane, crazy. Dude, like, it's crazy.
So yeah, anybody who might have been affected by that in any way, shape, or form, shout out to you, hope you're doing all right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we start off here in the sanatorium, and we go to fucking Eugene Victor Toombs's room, and I was very shocked to see him here because I didn't see the episode title.
That's
this
so
dude,
funny.
This little freak. Let me just point this out really quick. This guy's a freak.
This dude is
okay?
a freak.
He's a
freaky deaky, is what I would like to call him.
He's got his fucking little freaky arm squiggling through the slot in the door trying to unlock that shit. First of all, it looks like a magnetic, like one of those serious prison locks. You can't just undo it with a paper clip. All right? Like you're fucking Nancy Drew over here. No, this looks like a serious thing, but this guy's such a freaky little weirdo that I wouldn't even put it past him to be able to somehow get that off. But before he can get his freaky ass out of there, his doctor with somebody else comes in. It's a psychiatrist, I guess, or whoever. This guy Dr. Monty comes in to see Toombs and has a talk with him, and he says, like, tomorrow is your review and you have a pretty good chance of getting out. And I just want to say Toombs is in full freak mode. He can never in any moment pretend like he's a normal
person. Yeah, there's like one time where he like during the parole thing, we'll talk about it, like he's a little bit normal there. But otherwise, like, he's just fucking weird all the time.
And I don't even remember him being this weird in the first time, but I know it's because he's fiending. He's hungry.
He's got to have that last liver, bro. Liver crazy.
Dude, he's liver crazy right now. Brother, you ever been liver crazy?
Dude, no. Never once in my fucking life.
No, that's right, because you understand. You got to keep yourself supplied.
I tried liver one time when I was a child, and I'll... Like now that I'm in my 40s, I will basically eat anything. Like I'm up for everything, right? Like let's go. Like maybe I like it now. I tried it back in the day. I tried liver one time. It turned me off for life. I will never ever eat liver again. So
those
I'm not.
Moments. Yeah.
Dr. Monty's played by Paul Benvictor, and I just want to mention that his he was like a kind of a character actor on The Wire and a bunch of other stuff. Really, really like one of those working actor guys. So
Again, just they bring in these just great guys and they get like five lines and that's it.
Yeah. Dr. Monty doesn't spend a lot of time on the screen. So we get our intro and then we jump over to the FBI HQ. This is where we meet Deputy Director Skinner, who is extremely unhappy about Scully's reports. We should mention that the Smoky Man is in the room being quiet and smoking this entire time.
We haven't seen him in a while. He's just chilling there. He's puffing those things down.
Skinner is critiquing Mulder and Scully's methodology, saying that like they're kind of off book, basically, like they're using unconventional methods to do FBI investigations, and kind of implying that she's off the reservation, like she's they're fucking up.
Yeah, you're being warped by Mulder. We know that he's like this, but by all accounts, this was not you. And now I'm looking at your reports, and I'm not happy. But she stands her ground immediately, and she says like, "Yeah, we use unconventional methods, but our success rate is like." Up to 75%, which is way above the standard for FBI agents.
Yeah, absolutely. 75% it seems like great to me. And she actually says, like, what more do you require? Yeah. And Skinner, who I don't think is necessarily being unreasonable here, is like, I want conventional investigation and buy the book cases. Like, I want normal fucking activity.
Yeah.
And Scully responds that conventional investigation methods may decrease the rate of success. So just kind of this push and pull between the X-Files being this, like, stepchild of the FBI and they're not being approved by official channels and things like that, but also like the overarching layer of they want to shut the X-Files down, which we know about pretty clearly, right? We've been told that before.
Yeah, and I think Skinner stands out here because despite the fact that he's basically their boss chewing them out, but I think he shows a little bit more respect for them than a lot of the other authority figures have, at least maybe not in this scene, but throughout the episode.
Yes.
Is a bit more like he understands that these two are capable and are competent, but because of the way that they're doing things, it's just he can't let that happen. He can't let you keep just going off book and doing whatever the hell you want.
I attribute it to somebody that, like, I'm sure Skinner looks at these two as kind of, having been a manager before, one of my pet peeves was people coming in consistently like 10 or 15 minutes late. Like, if you need the extra time, tell me, we'll adjust your schedule. Like, but if you say you're going to be here at 8, be here at 8. Like, I'm not trying to be right. a weird Nazi about it, but like, everybody else here shows up at 8, so why can't you? Like, that kind of thing. And it's people that are like, too fucking cool. Like, oh no, I've got this job on lock. I'm super good at it, so I can do whatever the fuck I want to. Like, that's how he views Mulder and Scully, right? Like, that's the, and he wants just wants to put them in that box of that 8 to 5 box. So, we go over to Toombs, who is now before what I'm going to call the parole board. I don't think this is some sort of psychiatric evaluation.
Yeah, he's having his hearing review to let him know. Because I think that they didn't like get him on anything other than attacking Scully.
Correct. Yeah, they couldn't prove anything else from the previous.
Prove that he was like a freaky like lizard. Although liver-eating
freak. I think they should just be able to like hold a handout to his face and go like, "Your Honor, look at him.
This guy's a freak." I don't think
this guy is a freak with a capital K.
We shouldn't start locking people up for being freaks. It's obviously a slippery slope to go down. That's fascist right there. You start flocking on people for being freaks. I'm just saying.
This guy needs to be locked up. This particular
freak on the streets.
Yeah, this guy needs to get off the streets immediately. They begin to call witnesses. The first witness comes up, and we see Mulder in the audience, of course. She talks about how there's nothing, basically, like nothing physically wrong or medically wrong with him. Like, they tested him, and all of his results came back clear. The second witness says that he was experiencing some like misplaced anger, and that was the reason that he attacked Scully, which, like, he still attacked the woman. Like, what's up? Yeah. Like, we need to talk about this.
That's still an assault.
And then Dr. Monty is on the stand, and he talks about how Toombs just wants to go back into the world, get his old job back, to help people, to help animals. And we get this like moment where the doctor starts tapping his pen, and Toombs just like phases out. And this happens multiple times when we see Toombs and Monty in the same room, of just like him just like laser focusing on Monty. He wants that dude's liver. He's a freaky deaky liver
wants
guy.
He wants to suck down that guy's liver like he wouldn't believe.
He wants that liver
like
so badly. This is all very good. I think this is all.
It's all very good until Mulder gets on the stand and he says, "Listen, everybody, this guy is a freaky immortal lizard man who eats livers, and he's stretchy, and he's responsible for several murders." And everybody is like, "You fucking serious?"
Exactly.
You can't just get up there and say that.
Even the prosecutor, like the people who are trying to keep that are on Mulder's side, are like, "Mulder, step away from this. What the fuck are you doing?
Be saying this, dog."
And he's got. We should mention, he's got a whole presentation. He brought a screen and a projector with him to talk about, like, all of this old shit. Scully arrives kind of at the beginning of this and is, like, fucking rolling her eyes in the crowd, like, having just been chastised for doing some unorthodox stuff. Here's Mulder talking about a 100-year-old killer that looks like he's a 30-year-old freaky deaky guy.
And it's just, come on, Mulder. This isn't what anybody needs right now. This is not what was asked of you.
Nobody,
stressing us out.
Nobody is happy in this.
Nobody's happy. And basically they're just like, "Okay, yep, we're not going to listen to you. Sorry, dog. He's going to be released." But that's not right there. But Mulder is adamant, and he talks over everybody. He's being ignored, but he says, like, "Toombs will kill again. I assure you he will kill again." And afterwards, Scully comes up to talk to him, and she's a little frustrated.
And she says, like, you know, that Skinner's trying to reel her in. He insists that he's, like, telling the truth.
He only cares about the truth. He doesn't care if he makes a fool of himself. He's gonna just tell the truth.
They're called back inside, which is when they get the news that Toombs is gonna be released. He's got three requirements for his release, one of which is to keep his job, while that they let it, like, just let the job open, I guess. I don't know. I mean, who knows? It doesn't matter. The second is that he has to be in counseling, and the third is that he has to stay with this, like, freaky deepy adopted couple. I don't understand this at all. Like, I don't
He's going to be adopted as an adult son.
I don't like these two. I think they're fucking weird and crazy. They have basically.
I think you're taking a freak like this, you got to have a little darkness in you.
Have a little darkness in them, and I just want them off the screen. They're not on the screen for very long. But
they were looking for a third, which I'm not saying is darkness. I think if you think you're taking advantage of a mentally ill freaky deaky man, so that you can have a third in your marriage, that's darkness.
That's a dark place. That's a very very dark place. Yes,
and you know, there's an aura. There's just an aura.
There's just an aura from these two. I hate these two so much, Chris. I didn't even look them up. I just, as soon as they were like, and you have to stay with this couple who specializes in and has training and, you know, taking care of blah, 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 blah. And I was like, fuck these two forever. I hope he kills them immediately.
And it's because you picked up on the aura.
I picked up on the aura. I see auras pretty well on TV. Mm-hmm. Boulder is pretty upset. He wants to, you know, obviously watch and make sure that this dude doesn't kill again. He tells Scully to think of him as an animal. So like his opinion of this dude is in the fucking gutter. Like this, he doesn't think of this dude as a person at all at this point.
Yeah. No rights for this man.
No, absolutely. No Bill of Rights.
So yeah. Okay. He's going to be released. Mulder is just going to tail him. Mm-hmm. That's just what he's going to do, which is not by the book. He's not been authorized to do this. He's just going to stalk a man.
And he tells Scully, to like, hey, we need to review the previous evidence and see if there's anything in there that we can use to pin those murders on him. And she says, well, that's an unorthodox investigation. He says, you know, if you're saying that because you don't believe, that's one thing. But if you're saying that because of bureaucracy, they've already got you reeled in and skinned down. Like, and she's like, fuck it, I don't not
no,
believe.
No, he used the word skinned because Skinner was in the
show. Absolutely, yeah. This is where Toombs kind of passes them in the hallway with the two freaky deaky couple, and it kind of smiles as he does a little like, you know.
I just feel like in my mind he sticks out an iguana tongue and eats a fly. That's not what happens. He isn't a lizard. He's stretchy. He's not a lizard.
He's got lizard vibes though, man.
He's just like, got that reptilian vibe to him.
Yeah, he's got a lot of like weird goo. I don't know if reptilian. I don't think reptiles have a lot of weird goo. I don't know, but
I don't even know if it's goo. He just might be really sweaty, but it gives off a kind of a goo vibe.
He sweats goo. Is that what we're talking
about?
He's
right always
now?
Licking newspaper.
Oh, dude.
That just made my mouth dry. I need to take a sip of water.
We need to talk about, because right now he goes like, he's back on the street collecting dead animals off the street and he's picking up a dead rat and then he sneaks over to the van and licks his fingers. Like, there's no reason to do that. You like livers. No. You're nasty.
You like livers.
You're just fucking nasty.
Normally he eats, I think he eats like five livers over like 5 days and then he goes into hibernation, right? Like he just gets it taken care of. He's basically been liver edging for the last however many days. So he's like so close to the edge here.
Please
and he
don't ever say that again. Liver edging? Oh my God. I hate it.
Hey,
I hate it.
I'm not the one doing it.
I feel like you're describing it to a comfortable degree though.
He's really close. That's why this. So you see the veins popping out in his
head.
He's very
sweaty. So nasty. He's a liver edging,
right,
frog brained weirdo.
Now you're
freaky
it.
Deaky.
Now you're saying.
Well,
it.
I got used to it real quick, so now I'm going
to
just say it a bunch.
He's real close to he's, you know, he's just close to finishing.
He's so close to the liver finish, is what you're saying.
So he can barely think about anything else, and that's why he's licking like dead cat blood.
Yeah, he even
and
sees
this guy, and he immediately talk about getting locked in. This guy's doing going around. He sees some woman walking down the street, and he locks the fuck in.
He does.
He starts moving, dude, and he's so. Strange. He's so strange. And he's just got tunnel vision. He can't even tell what's going on. He's walking towards this woman who hasn't even noticed him. And then all of a sudden, Mulder steps up. cuts him off because he has been stalking him.
I love this.
And he's like, oh, can you help me find my dog? Blah, blah, blah. And old Eugene Toombs, he gets scared. He's no longer locked in. Still edging, no longer locked in, but then he gets in his van and he speeds off.
Well, you know how it is, like, if you get interrupted masturbating, right? Like, there's like that uncomfortable couple of minutes where you're like, what do I do? My hand's gross. I don't know how to.
Yeah, sure.
But I still
have
to pretend to be a normal person. What do I do? it's a very uncomfortable situation. And if he's been liver edging for the last year or so, like, I think it's been at least a year. Like, he's been on the edge. So you can only imagine.
I have been a little harsh. I think anyone in his shoes would maybe be a little freaky.
I don't think we should excuse this kind of behavior. We should also mention the kind of video effect that they do when he locks in on somebody. All of the color drains from the rest of the screen, and the only thing in color is the person that he's locked in on, which is I think kind of trite nowadays. I think at the time this was probably newer technology and looked really really neat.
Because now you can tell a guy's locked in just by his kind of his posture. His vibe. But back then you needed to see a color.
You needed to be able to tell if that person had a fancy liver or not.
Right.
Right. I love.
Oh, you think she's just got like a banging liver?
That's
what this is
about? Yeah, I think that's what, because that's the reason like he doesn't just like, you know, kill randomly, right? Like that's right. He finds these people who like he have must fucking
like, he likes the, a big beautiful liver,
the most delicious quarter pounder liver that he can possibly get to.
Okay.
I don't know, or maybe like I don't know what liver sizes, like do livers come in different sizes? Can you have a giant liver?
But this, you know, the man that he goes to his house there, that man's clearly got a BBL. He's got a big, beautiful liver. You know what I mean?
That's not what a BBL is. Don't Google it. That's not what a BBL is.
Google it just to see if I'm right or wrong.
Oh my God. I love Mulder has some like banter here where he talks about a dog that he's looking for. I use him to hunt moose.
Is this a reference to something? I don't know.
I didn't get the reference, but I'm into it. We jump back to the retirement home where Detective Briggs lives. So this was a character from the first episode with Toombs.
I felt like I was seeing like Thor in a Captain America movie here. I was like, whoa, we know.
Oh,
this
you
guy.
You like this? You like the crossover moment, huh? Getting the team back together.
It's so insignificant, but I was like, hey,
I know that dude. I feel like we're gonna feel the same way when that, like, I can't remember the name of him now, but the Lonely Island of the X-Files, what are those, was there three
the
guys,
lone gunman? Yeah,
the
lone
gunman, yeah.
the lonely island is Andy Samberg and that other dude.
So Scully is here to talk to Briggs because Briggs was kind of involved in investigations both in the 1930s and the 1960s, and he remembers one thing, and the thing that he remembers is that there is a liver in a jar in his living room. That's a weird.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
By the way, I just kept this liver.
I got a
found.
BBL back in the living room.
Yeah,
like
I just kept this BBL, and I guess the concept that Briggs is trying to sell here is that Toombs took this liver from somebody but hid the body. This is the only victim whose body they never found because there was some sort of evidence on the body that would indicate that Toombs did this. This seems like a huge stretch to me, and it's in a series known for some huge stretches, so I should read you the description for the next episode.
Did they ever even determine what the evidence? I mean, I know that there's like the teeth marks, right?
That's
but
it.
Like,
that's just. I guess he was worried.
Back in the 30s, I'm not sure they're using this 3D technology to match.
Why was
records.
Toombs worried about the teeth marks? Yeah, I don't know.
They show like it looks like a ring on the finger of the victim, and I thought, oh, maybe that's something to do with Toombs. No.
Yeah.
No.
He believes that because they found this liver at a chemical plant. He believes that Toombs buried this body in the foundations of the chemical plant before the concrete was poured. So Scully, Briggs, and a hapless technician that I absolutely adore brings some radar tech to this chemical plant.
I love
plant.
When there's just a random person who's got to do a job with them.
God, just call me hapless technician. That's who I am.
Change the Discord name.
And they start radar in this place, which is cool 90s tech. I like this a lot. I wonder if you can do this nowadays. I'm sure you can.
I'm sure. Why not? But it wouldn't be as cool because it would just be like if somebody holds up their iPhone. They're like, here.
The moment you bring out your Android phone on an FBI crime scene, I'm just fucking checked out.
I want you bringing some weird clanking machine. That's the only thing.
I need something in a fucking suitcase. That's what I want.
I need something that's hard to move.
Yeah. We dip over to Toombs, who is picking up more dead animals, and this time spots a man with a very... very quality BBL, and when we get the same video effect where the color fades out of everything,
you can see it like bouncing as he walks. His BBL, his liver, you know, under his skin.
Yeah, it looks like a dude with a giant dick and like some gray sweatpants, right? Like it's just a swinging. That BBL is just a swinging out there, bro. Mm-hmm. I love it when my liver be swinging.
It's real loose in there.
Real loose in there, and it's gonna look. It's just underneath the shirt, just swaying side to side swinging.
It's a huge. Huge medical concern.
It doesn't seem like it's going to be. It would be. It seems like it would be a medical concern. Like you should go to the doctor if your liver starts swinging, especially if it's swinging with an A. Like if it starts swinging with an A, you got a problem.
Dude.
Yeah.
If it's swinging like you're hogged up under there, that's an issue.
What are we talking about?
Okay. So Toombs has found his next victim. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's able to like maintain it for a minute, and I don't know if we even mentioned that. Okay, so he found his new target. Boom. We switch back over to Scully. They have now found the spot. They have dug it up. They have found it. What looks like a skeletal hand in a ring. Again, doesn't matter. They found a body. They found a skeletal remains. They're going to dig up that piece of cement and bring it back to check it out.
Listener, ask yourself, what is more likely? Did they find the dead body using the advanced radar technology that they brought to the chemical plant? Or did the old man in a wheelchair wheel himself into the dark?
The aura. Sense the aura.
Point to a random spot and say, it's there. And then they dig an inch in the ground and find this hand. Like, just one inch. Mm-hmm. It's not even very far.
When you become when you reach a certain age, you do gain a bit of mysticism.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Especially if you're retired.
TV Tropes regrettably calls this the magical Negro trope, which Supernatural and X-Files often. I mean, it's kind of like that going to the college professor kind of thing, or
anytime
an old black person shows up to give some advice, like, you know, that kind of thing. So
they didn't find it using technology. They found it using unspoken mysticism. So back over to the guy that Toombs is stalking, and we get like a little glimpse of his home at night. He's up late working. His wife is taking care of a baby. Mulder has also followed Toombs to this location, and he's kind of scouting out the neighborhood. He doesn't know where Toombs has gone. Well, boom, Toombs is in the fucking sewers like a stinky little freak. He belongs down there.
There's no reason to be in the sewers. I think he just does this to be stinky. I think he just wants to be stinky.
He does this to be stinky. All the entry points. He could come in through a window, which he does. Easily goes through windows, but he thinks, no, I'm going to come up through the toilet.
Got to get through the toilet first. Absolutely.
Okay, pervert. Okay, freak.
And he does. And like he turns the water green. So this poor wife, who is like taking care of a sick child, who's ignored by her husband. Her husband came home from work in his like hot rod Mustang, which, you know, he's out.
And it looks like he's working late. No, he's playing online solitaire.
Yeah, it looks like he's on Excel, but he's switching over to World of Warcraft, which just released in 1994. It was a huge thing.
He's playing not RuneScape, it was Ultima Online or EverQuest or some shit.
Yeah, I don't actually know if there was any online games in 94. Like, that's probably a little early for online stuff. Like, they had like BBS stuff then. I don't know. Be curious.
BBL stuff?
No, they didn't have any BBL. Look, I wasn't in those corners in the internet in 1994.
Sure,
okay?
Sure.
I was looking for a much different BBL in 1994.
Big beautiful liver, right?
100%. This poor wife has to clear the toilet. She gets a fucking Roto-Rooter out. Like, she's going. She got the fucking gloves. She's ready to rock this out. And then once she clears it, her baby starts screaming. So I figured like what we would see is like him climb out of the toilet, but no, he starts pulling down the Roto-Rooter. So when she comes back, she like has to pull it out, and then she locks the toilet from the outside because it has a baby lock on it, which is a weird thing that I would not think to do if I had a child. Like, I would have to read that in a book or something.
I don't recall ever that my parents having. Toilet locks.
Yeah. But it must be really frustrating.
They knew I was going to spend a lot of time in there.
Yeah.
So.
They could tell. They could just see it. Yeah. You had one sip of milk and we're like, uh-oh.
Sometimes your destiny is just laid out plainly before you.
Yeah, Harry Potter had a lightning mark on his forehead. You, however, something much different.
Mine came with a smell.
The prophecy reveals itself in many different ways, Chris.
That's right. So this little freakazoid tries to climb out of the toilet, but it's locked, so he's got to find another way in. He eventually comes in through the fucking window.
Yeah, and he looks so nasty and gross. Like,
he's
he is
so nasty. He's covered in poo-poo, dude.
He's covered in poo-poo, right? Like, he's just
poo-poo.
A real...
It was on the pipes, and now it's on him.
What
if you're just taking a shit on him?
Can you imagine, like, this dude... Because he's going to be all sneaky-deaky once he gets in the room, right? Like, because he wants to sneak up and kill this dude.
But you could smell him a mile away.
Dude, that smell has to just be, like, in the... Like, I'm surprised the husband isn't like, oh, my God, I got to log off of RuneScape and deal with this situation.
He heard the toilet flush, and he knows his wife's got some...
What did my wife do? Did she kill something?
She's got some nasty post-pregnancy shits, you know?
Baby, is that you or the baby? Jesus Christ. What happened in there? I'm trying to do Excel. Can you please stop shitting the place up for me?
Jesus Christ.
I'm playing with Microsoft Excel. Leave me alone. Stop shitting all the time. God damn it. You're the worst wife. Take care of my child and stop shitting. Jesus. Don't even like my BBL anymore. You won't touch it. It swings all the time for you and nobody else. I'm gonna go get my Mustang and go to work.
Oh, God. Mulder's outside.
Yes, we should probably mention that.
Mulder's issue is that he doesn't know where Toombs went. He doesn't know who he stopped. You know, he came here to this neighborhood, but he doesn't know which house he's in. So he's kind of sneaking around, and then he finally sees like an open window. And yeah, sure enough, Toombs is in this guy's house, sneaking about.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get back into the toilet from the other side. And then Mulder just, he realizes this, an entry has been made in this window, so he runs up, knocks on the door, flashes the FBI badge. He's like, there's an intruder in your house. They run in. And sure enough, the guy finds a different window is open, because Toombs did realize his cover was blown, that Mulder was there. If he didn't spend so much time edging and he just went in for the kill, ate that liver, he could have been, like, done already. But he's a little freak, and he likes to make it last.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like... let me rephrase. I don't like this section at all. I just want to say, like, I feel like this is, it's not quite the same as the first episode, because we never really had, like, Mulder chasing this dude down and getting so close and, like, interrupting his kills or whatever. But it also, at the same time, just, it feels like a retread in a real way. Like, some of the, like, spooky stuff. Yeah. I just didn't feel like some of these kind of scenes were kind of boring. Eventually, Mulder basically just like, he, I think he sees some filthy, shitty handprints on the windowsill.
Yeah. He smells the rank stench of sewers.
He smells
and formaldehyde horrible, or whatever this man normally horrible smells scent.
Like. Forces his way into the house, essentially, and is like, you have an intruder, and like the guy is already gone. And Mulder runs outside and realizes that the van is gone, so he missed him completely. We skip back to Scully, who is at the autopsy for this giant brock of cement that they have excavated out of the chemical factory. There's some bite marks on some of the bones, and they found some pennies that date back to 1930. But since it's just a fucking pile of bones and cement, they can't figure out a cause of death. They don't really know what killed him, so they can't really link anything. What they do have,
this little conversation where, okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what they do have though is like some unconventional investigation practices. Yeah. This dude has acquired some software. And he acquired a picture from Briggs showing who the victim might be. And they superimposed the skull and the picture to see if it would fit, if the facial structure would fit. And he says that it does. However, like, that's not, he can't file that officially. Like, that's all, like, kind of off the record type stuff. So again, we're going back to playing with that RB plot, which is like, how do we prove this stuff? How do we make this into a real case, et cetera, et cetera.
And I think it's interesting that Scully is willing to do the off-the-book thing, even when, like, Mulder's not there. Mulder isn't involved in this right now. But she's still kind of doing the unorthodox thing because she, like any true scientist, is, like, always pushing towards the unknown. Let's try this other thing. Let's see this. Let's see that. Because I think she does come off as being very by the book most of the time. And this is just a small thing. But her willingness to do it either shows that she has that same kind of spirit that Mulder does, or that it has just now rubbed off on her.
Yeah. Or at the same time, like, she believes everything about Tomb. She's seen it for herself. She knows he's a killer. They got to get him off the streets.
She knows he's a freaky lizard man.
She knows about the BBL obsession and has to get after it.
And she does not like it.
She brings that picture to Mulder, and as he's been staking out the house that Tombs is supposed to be living in. She brings him a sandwich and jokingly says that it's a liverwurst sandwich. I don't know what liverwurst is. Sounds horrible.
Sounds the worst.
She points out that he's been, you know, doing this solo for like 3 days, which is against proper procedure. He says he can't get backup without requesting it. And she's like, oh, I'll do it. And he's like, no, I don't want you to do it because, you know, there's a chance that if this goes sideways, like, you might have a condemnation in your record and I don't want to risk that. And she says, and I think this is the moment of the episode for me, Chris. She calls him Fox. Oh my God, my heart. And he has to interrupt. Like, he is so touched that he's like,
I swear that's the first time that she or anyone has done it. But
yeah, and it happens.
I'm sure somebody has said Fox before, she does it.
It happens again later in the episode, which is interesting.
Yeah,
but it's the first time that we see Dana say it. Because I believe she's Dana at this point, not Scully. And I get a little traction here. It's 20 episodes in, and I'm finally like maybe getting on the ship train. A little spark. Because
he jokes immediately, and he's like, I even made my parents call me Mulder. So she starts over again, and she just says Mulder. Okay, I wouldn't put myself on the line for anybody but you. It's this really serious moment where Mulder just looks at her, and then he breaks the tension. And then he just says, if there's an iced tea in that bag, it could be love. And she reaches into the bag and she says, must be fate, Mulder. It's root beer.
Got him.
I love this entire moment.
This moment of intimacy between them as they're both kind of intensely trying to run this case. They've got a lot on their minds. They're both really stressed out. They both want the same goal. And they just have this moment of like kind of carefree intimacy between the two of them in the middle of the night. It's just really, really interesting and nice. And I don't know that they're going to make out. I'm not saying I want them to make out.
I don't even get that vibe. It's just like, it's caring.
But when she calls him Fox, it breaks my heart. So.
Yeah, just something about it. Something about it just kind of pulls on the heartstrings there. But so she sends him off. She's like, go home. I'm going to take care of this. And give me that sandwich. I'll finish the sandwich myself.
Yep. And he finally agrees.
This part confused me because as Mulder finally goes home to go to sleep, Scully stares at the bite that he took out of the sandwich and she's examining it. And I'm like, did Toombs do it? What is she looking
at? What is the concept here? We also see that like his Mulder's trunk like closes from the inside. We see that very briefly. Mulder, meanwhile, falls asleep to the original version of The Fly, which is kind of an apt movie for this episode, I think, of just one dude transforming into a freaky deaky little freak. As he's falling asleep, one of the screws of his vent start unscrewing itself. Again, neat trick that we've already seen in the previous episode. So this kind of didn't work for me again either, because it's trying to build up this tension of like, oh, Mulder woke up for a second, so I've got to stop unscrewing the screw to get the vent or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, can we just hurry? I know you can do this. Like, I saw this in the cold open of the first episode. Like I'm good. I don't need to see this again.
So when he gets in, this is where the actual interesting thing happens, where he like claws up his own face and he's just being weird and he's just looking at Mulder and it's like, huh? And then it cuts. And then when we come back, we realize that Toombs staged it to look like Mulder beat the shit out of him. He's got his jaw dislocated and his shoulders all fucked up, and he's got a big boot print on his face, which he of course created using Mulder's shoe. So he completely is trying to frame Mulder to see that this deranged FBI agent beat me up, which is, I just thought he was gonna go in and eat Mulder, but he doesn't have that BBL, so he
doesn't have the BBL.
He just did something a little more sinister to get him off his back.
Also, 2 years later, Marky Mark would do this exact same maneuver in the movie Fear. Just want to mention that.
Damn.
just Marky Mark is just robbing stuff from X-Files at that point. Damn. In his career. I don't know what he's doing nowadays. I haven't kept up with Marky Mark. Maybe he's changed his name. I have no idea.
Maybe he has. Who knows?
We get a knock at the door at Mulder's house, his apartment. He wakes up and it's cops. And it's funny, I don't know this relationship that the FBI has with the cops, but the cops just walk in and just go looking for shoes in his house, and it's very hilarious. Yeah. They match the shoe prints to the one on his face, and he's told to basically collect his things, like he's getting arrested almost. And he finds, as that's happening, he finds the screw for one of his vents, like, on the floor. And we don't deal with a lot of, like, I'm an FBI agent, you can't arrest me, or anything like that. We just skip all of that. He's not in jail. Instead, he's called in to, him and Scully both are called in to talk to Skinner, who are saying, like, you know, hey, these are very serious allegations that you beat up somebody. Basically, do you have an alibi? Because like, and he says like, no, this is Toombs framing me. Like, if you look at the shoe from the inside, you realize that da 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 da. And Scully is like, absolutely, that's true. But also, I was with him the entire time, lying.
Yeah,
which is crazy from
she
Scully.
Straight up just lies. Yeah. She lies to be his alibi, and whether or not they really believe her, I guess is kind of not the point here, because we're led to believe that Mulder has all these connections, you know, in the Capitol. So, and Skinner kind of points out, like, this was close, Mulder. This was really close. Next time, doesn't matter how many friends you have, you're not getting away with this. But that conversation comes after. Because after Scully decides to be his alibi, Skinner asks to just speak to Mulder alone for a minute, although the smoking man is still in the room with him.
Yeah. We should also note, I love Scully's line here when Skinner's like, should I trust you? And she says, I would expect you to place the same trust in me as I do in you. That's not answering the question, but it's also a thing to say. With Scully out of the room, Skinner starts talking about how talented Mulder is and like kind of what the whole organization views his obsession with this kind of X-Files department as a waste of his talents. But he also says he respects his commitment to the cases, but he's letting himself get too close to it. He says he needs to step away for a vacation. And Mulder is just like, yep, I agree. Thank you for your concern. Like with the idea of that's definitely not ever going to happen. Like I'll go on vacation and still chase this dude down to make sure he doesn't kill anybody. I don't know why this, as the camera pans over, like in every FBI agent office, there's a picture of the president. And I don't know why seeing a picture of Bill Clinton made me laugh, but it did.
I didn't even notice.
It was just
really
a picture
funny.
Of Bill Clinton. And I was like, oh yeah, that dude was oh, that's a weird time. Yeah, that's okay. Weird. But I don't know. It made me chuckle for some reason. So
yeah, it's not something you see a lot these days.
It's not. Yeah, it's really not. You don't hear about that dude very often.
Yeah. All right. So where are we at?
He tells Mulder to stay away from Toombs. And says, as you mentioned, that his friends in Capitol won't blah blah blah. And then we go back to the autopsy room, because Scully's idea when she saw the sandwich was to see if they could match Toombs's current tooth prints, his dental records, to the bones from 1930, which had teeth, human teeth marks they've now discovered. They have some crazy cool 90s 3D animation software that they use to create 3D props from the dental records and to match it with the bite, and the, some glowy green lights come on and say that it's a match. It's all good. I love this. It's all fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta love that early 90s 3D dental software, you know?
Love it.
They're putting it to good use.
Mm-hmm. Speed dentist is probably what that is called.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this freak Eugene Toombs is shredding up newspaper, like, just, you know, nothing normal about that. And when his doctor comes to see him, and he's like, oh, what, are you making some paper mache? I didn't know you were into art. And Toombs couldn't be any weirder. He's like, I'm into art.
I like art.
I like art. And then he goes up and he locks the door, and then we just hear the screams of the doctor as Toombs presumably eats that last liver.
Finally gets that last liver. Mulder and Scully arrive at this house. I don't know what called them to the house. Like, this is kind of a weird, like, I don't want to say plot hole, but like, they just show up, like somebody called them, the emergency services or something. Nobody's in here. The light doesn't work, but they see Monty's body, like, all mutilated, and Mulder is like, that makes five. And I genuinely didn't remember that he had four kills in the last episode. So I was like, this is the first
short.
This is the first kill, right? Like, I thought I was way off. But yeah, this is the fifth one. So now there's the danger that they're going to lose him, because he's going to go into hibernation. So where is he going to go? Probably back home to the original apartment building.
But that apartment building that he's always gone back to for, you know, 70 years or whatever is not there anymore. It's been knocked down, and they're building a mall or something there now. And they figure, like, well, even if the apartment isn't there, he's probably going to go to that same place because he's this strange creature of habit. So they go in there and they start looking around this, what is essentially a construction site. It looks like just a kind of like a regular mall.
It looks like a mall. Like, it looks almost like it's just finished. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they look like they are
not open to the public yet.
By all accounts, it looks like a fucking food court that they're in, right? Like, this is like, there's a Chick-fil-A on one side and like a Chinese place and like a fucking Sbarro's pizza and like,
And a stinky Burger King.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I got everything.
Auntie Anne's? Can I get one of them soft pretzels, dog?
Yo, let me get one of those huge pretzels. Forget all... I would never go to the food court. I was going straight to the fucking pretzel stand.
Oh, man. Working at a mall for a few years, like, I consumed a lot of food at the food court. Probably is what gave me colon cancer, now that we're talking about it.
Oh, but... sure.
Who knows?
I think we can confidently just say that's probably it.
Yes, probably it. I'll tell my oncologist tomorrow, so don't worry about it.
By the way, food court food, right?
They,
food court food. You worked at a mall?
Got it. Okay. I need to start asking people that.
Damn.
Damn, dude. My oncologist is 17. I'm not kidding. Good care, Chris. You need to help. I got a Doogie Howser without the Doogie. I just got a Howser.
Oh no, he's just a Howser.
He's just a Howser.
He just started. You see him writing down food court food, food court mall food. Okay.
I'm sorry for people that don't know or just now finding out that I have a weird disease, but I'm way past the point of learning about it, so I could just make a bunch of weird jokes about it. So,
and I'm sorry. There's probably people who are horrified to listen to me joke about it specifically, because it's not happening to me. I'm just being insensitive.
No, you're not. You're rolling with me on the same jokes. Autumn does the same thing. That's right. Autumn joke about this all the time.
You have to. Yeah. You have to.
I told her the other day that I've my cancer card now looks like just a worn out ATM card. Like, just someone has just used it, because I use it so much for everything. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. I've got cancer.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to.
Pretty sure.
Take advantage of the things that you can in life.
Pretty sure I don't have to pay taxes.
I'm confident that that's a rule.
I haven't looked it up at the IRS.
Dr. Hauser said it.
Dr. Dougie Hauser. Anyway, they get to the food court. Scully says he probably is going back to the same place where it used to be, and thinks that there's like a storage building on the second floor. As they're about to go up the escalator, Mulder has a hunch. That's a big thing in this episode. Like, Briggs had a hunch. Hunches, Mulder has a hunch. And he opens this like kind of service panel. And crawls under. There's a weird moment where he's like taking his tie and his jacket off, and Scully like kind of looks at him, and I'm like, "What are you doing, Scully? What are you thinking right over there?"
I don't know. He's shedding his skin, dude. He's shedding FBI carapace.
It's true. It's
and he's evolving
true.
Into the creature underneath.
He's just becoming. He's becoming Duchovny.
He's becoming Duchovny. And he starts, you know, squirming around in the vents down here. He draws his gun. Scully's calling out to him, clearly blowing his cover. And as he gets closer and closer, boom, Toombs jumps out and attacks him.
Yeah, he gets to the cocoon. He gets
his sticky, sweaty mitts all over.
Ooh, dude, I would have to take so many showers. I would be in a shower fucking a month at this point. He doesn't smell the cocoon this time, which I thought was a good learning experience, because the last time he like stuck his finger in it and like literally smelled it, and it was really gross.
Yeah.
They start to tussle.
His nose. He put a little toothpaste under his nose. That was an old trick when I worked at the hospital.
There you go.
A little toothpaste under the nose, so you can't smell the sticky stuff.
They start to tussle. He manages to throw Toombs off and starts climbing back towards the entrance. He gets to the entrance, and Scully's obviously trying to get him out, but Toombs grabs him by the foot. This time, Mulder really does kick him in the face, which is great, which gives him the time to escape the panel, slam the switch on the escalator, which presumably like crushes Toombs.
I don't know. He's so stretchy and strange that I could just really picture him getting sucked up.
Becoming the escalator,
He gets sucked up into it like a shoelace. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one horrifying skin escalator, in a fucking Hellraiser mall. Now it's a Hellraiser mall. You know what I'm talking about? I will show you many delights. Like, here's my skin escalator. Like, that's not delightful.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
dude, that's not delightful at all.
Yeah, that just looks like weird. This is like an escalator with some goop on it. I don't know what you're doing. Hellraiser all sad in the corner. This is one of my many delights.
Worked very hard for this.
I only have so many, god damn it.
Now the question is this gonna kill Toombs, or are we gonna see him again?
Because
if this killed him, great death, excellent death,
but
if it didn't kill him, then
if it kills him, like, where are the consequences of this? Like, because there is, like, right. How do they, because the whole point of the episode was like these unconventional techniques aren't approved by the FBI, and like they've done that, and now they've killed this dude. Presumed, like, they don't really have any hard evidence that this guy is a killer, besides like maybe a body.
They don't
from
have
the
any
1930s.
Hard evidence that he exists because he was sucked up into the escalator,
right? Like, so, like, do they just walk out of this place and are like, okay, see you later? Like, someone's gonna find a bad surprise tomorrow. Like,
the question is, it's been 30 years since this aired.
Has it? 20, right? Please tell me it's just 20.
Yeah, I know. I'm in my 30s. I was 3 years old when this aired.
Okay. It's been 30 years since this episode came out.
30 years since this aired. And that's how long it takes for Toombs to come back, right?
Maybe we're going to get we're going to see him in the remake or whatever they're about to do.
Yeah, I think we got to see him in the remake. Yeah, I don't know what the remake is going to be, but I think we're going to see Toombs.
Ah, man, I'm so curious. I'm so leery of remakes and reboots and things like that
nowadays.
I think
I've had enough. I'm ready to move on. Except for Final Fantasy VII. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, you're pretty good with that. He's dead, I guess, we're going to assume. And then we cut to Skinner's office, where he's literally closing the file on Toombs, and he asks the Smoking Man if the Smoking Man believes the file. And for the first time, we hear him speak, and he says, "Of course I do." Outside, meanwhile, Mulder has found a cocoon in a tree, and he's just staring at it. Yeah. And
he's like, "Hey, I myself just shed a cocoon like thing.
I have also changed in some way.
I am too metamorphosized."
Yes, I also like BBLs. And Scully's like, "What now? What was that last bit? That's you show me a garden of delights? Is that? Did you just say that out loud with your mouth?" Instead, he says, "A change force is coming." And she says, "How do you know?" And he says, "A hunch." This is obviously doing some, like, we're getting close to the end of the season, so this is probably like some we're gonna heat up the meta plot a little bit. So some changes are coming for him, I guess. So
yeah. Everybody's had a lot of hunches in this episode, like you said, and this is just yet one more hunch.
We fade out on the cocoon. That's the last thing we see.
Yeah, boom. That's it. And another one in the books.
Another one in the books. Yeah, I didn't... other than like some of the Scully and Mulder stuff.
We had good character moments, some good dynamics. We brought in Skinner, who I really like. But other than that, yeah, it was just completely retreading the same territory.
Yeah. And I'm okay with like Toombs as a villain. I don't know that he comes back anytime soon. Like, I'm hoping you're right. Like, it would be really dope. It would be almost like David Lynch doing Twin Peaks season 3 25 years later, kind of dope if they managed to pull that off. Have you already emailed me your episode? We're not finished talking, Chris. Are you not recording?
Oh no. I made it before we got on here. I was ready, dude. Okay. I was ready with the Skinner shit.
I literally just got an email from you that says episode 21.
You're about to get a text, too.
Oh, and I'm getting episode art. You haven't even sent me episode art for episode 20.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you got to get me episode 20 before you get me episode 21, my bro.
Oh, brother. All right. Okay, well, I'll do that after.
Okay. I don't know how you're sending me audio if you're... I'm so confused right now. What are you doing?
I'm locked in. What do you mean?
Oh, you're not sending me audio. You're sending me the screenshot. Okay, I get it. So you haven't stopped recording in the middle of the finale.
Yeah. No. I did it before we recorded.
Jesus fucking Christ. So let's get out of here. Let's talk about stuff. We're getting close to the end of the season. Listeners who are not familiar with our other podcast, we do a season feedback episode. So you can email us at monsterofthe week podcast@gmail.com. You can also comment on the Patreon post. You can send us stuff on Twitter. You can do whatever you want to. If you send us stuff on Twitter, make sure you like say that you want it in the feedback episode. Otherwise, I'll just probably make a funny response to you. You can also
just
like
assume you're chatting.
Just assume that you're like being polite or not. I don't know. You can also hit us up on Tumblr if that's a place that you want to be. Send us all of your thoughts about season one. Someone sent us their thoughts about season 14 of Supernatural. So obviously the doors are open. I don't know.
Sure.
We'll probably read it. Our guest for season one feedback is a Supernatural person as well. Just as a little bit of a hint. And that's it, I think. Is that it, Chris? Do you have any final thoughts?
I think that's it.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with more baby dolls and X-Files. Look forward to that. And remember...
Sorry about all that BBL stuff.
I'm not at all. Big, beautiful liver. Remember, in the meantime, everybody, to stay spooky. Love the Katamari Damacy soundtrack.
God damn it, I do. I listened to it twice. Soothes the soul a little bit. You know, it was the 20th anniversary the other day.
Oh yeah?
Which makes me feel pretty old. But what a joyous game. Listener, we've talked about this 100 times, maybe not on this podcast yet, but Katamari Damacy. Katamari.
Easily one of the best. Katamari. Easily one of the best video games of all time.
Yeah. And if you're just like, hey, listen, I'm not into all this hardcore gaming shit, you guys. It's not hardcore.
It's not hardcore.
It's like a fun puzzle game. You just roll up a ball and you get the ball gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's, you just solve puzzles by how big can I get my ball? You know?
And don't
it's got delightful music. It's colorful and wacky. It's on everything. Buy that game.
Don't be discouraged when you finish a level and the giant uncle starts yelling at you. Because that's just part of the game. Like he just has bad opinions. So we're gonna ignore what he says.
I think you have to get like 10 times the set goal, and
you have to do something.
To give you a little bit
insane.
Of praise.
Yeah. Katamari is one of like the handful of games that Autumn is obsessed with. Like it's Diablo and it's Katamari. I'm just trying to think. There was one more. That we
that
played
Rain's
a bunch of
Game of Thrones game. Did
that Rain's Game of Thrones game. Yeah, yeah. She's like gambling with real money in solitaire somehow, and I don't understand how that's happening. So that's a bad plan. But she loves Katamari. I put the soundtrack on as a surprise yesterday because we were running around doing doctor's appointments, and she immediately started vibing. Like she was like dancing in her seat listening to the soundtrack.
It is a surprise. It's a nice surprise because it hasn't been on streaming platforms for 20 years.
It's been a while. If you looked up Katamari on, because I've done this, I tried to buy the soundtrack, I think I've told you this many times, on iTunes back when it was called iTunes, and it was ended up being a like remix album with none of the original tracks. And and they weren't bad, but that's not what I wanted. Wasn't the vibe that I was going for.
But now we got the vibe. We're locked in. Mm-hmm. We're all set.
I can play. I just at a touch of a button. I can play the Katamari soundtrack on this podcast anytime you're ready.
Good. I think we should just be doing that as like interstitial.
Absolutely.
Between scenes of the show, suddenly start playing Katamari music. Who needs a full minute of music?
Who needs the soundtrack that Jake provided us? No. Shout out to Jake, by the way. He's got a new, by the time of recording, he released a new album today. This will be out next week, so it'll be last week. So go check out bandcamp.jakelionheart.com, I think, too, or vice versa. I don't know how any of that works. Jake Lionheart on Bandcamp. If you're not familiar, if you haven't heard us talk about him, he's done a lot of the interstitial music for us. He's done like the end credits music that we use on this podcast. He's done a ton of remixes for us. He did all of like a ton of remixes for the Monster of the Week podcast when we were doing stuff over there. Like it's good stuff. He's a good dude. If you need like, you know, music for your podcast, you should probably check him out because he will do it for you.
He's your man.
And he is of the very rare combination of fast, good, and cheap. Like you don't normally find all three of those in one person. And
that's right.
And I always, because he's always like, dude, you're such a good friend, I'm not going to charge you that much. And I like double whatever he tells me it's going to cost because yeah. I just can't handle him not charging me enough. So
got to hook him up.
Yeah,
Jake's the best.
Are you done with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
For now, yeah. I've actually had a little bit of gamer burnout, I've realized, because I'm like, what am I doing with my time? And it does happen every time I get so obsessed with the game. Where then it's like, okay, I've beat it. I'm ready to kind of come down from it a little bit. And now I don't really feel like playing much of anything. Although I have played a little bit of that game, Unicorn Overlord. You heard of
this
game?
Yeah, I know that game. Mm-hmm.
Extremely great strategy role-playing game. It's one of those games where you pick your units. Each unit has a different specialty, whether it's they're strong against horsemen or they're strong against archers or whatever it is. And you kind of build your little teams and then you move around a battlefield. And every character has like conditions that you'll set for when they will activate skills. So like if they're less than 75% health, they will cast a heal. If they're facing this enemy, they'll use that skill. So you can really get into like the nitty gritty with that kind of stuff and make some really cool like combos. And I have been a little bit into that. I guess I've played about 8 hours of it over the last 2 weeks.
That's a little bit. Yeah, that's a good
a little
amount.
Bit.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying what I've played so far. The story, I'm like, I don't care. I can basically just not pay attention whenever they start talking. And I don't even think it doesn't matter. You're a prince and you're reclaiming your throne and recruiting people to your army to fight your... It doesn't matter. But I mean, all the character art's great, and I love the sprite work and stuff.
It looks really pretty. Like the stuff, because there's a demo available too. Like you can go download a demo, and then like I think all of that stuff transfers to the main game, so you can do that. I was tempted by it, but like I'm so overloaded with games right now. Like I'm playing multiple games at the same time, which is something I hardly ever do. And I don't know what is wrong with me at this point. So
sneaks up on you sometimes. But yeah, definitely recommend that down the road, especially if it's cheap or whatever down the road, or if it's on Game Pass or something. Worth checking it out.
I've played probably 8 hours of Dragon's Dogma 2 at this point.
Oh, nice. How's that going?
One of the very first things that happens is like you go to this little village. And a guy is like, we need to get you to the castle. Like, I need to take you to some authorities. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we head off to the authority place or whatever. And on the way, there's some goblins. And so you have to kill the goblins. And I died 3 times to the goblins because I'm a mage.
Oh,
and I hadn't recruited a pawn yet, which is like your little helper buddy. And I was really bad at the game. And then one of the goblins leapt at me. It jumped at me. And I moved out of the way, and the goblin like totally just fucking failed the jump and like was huddled up on the ground. And I walked up to it, and I saw on the bottom right hand corner is all your like, you know, controls or what, you know, your kind of context sensitive controls. And R2 said grab. So I was like, okay, definitely going to do that. Yeah, grab the goblin. I literally pick him up. I'm cradling him in my arms. And like I get a tooltip as soon as I do it. So like the game was like waiting for me to do this to tell me how to do it basically. And it was like, oh, when enemies are, I don't know if it was stunned or fainted or whatever, like you can pick them up if you're strong enough. And I was like, well, I'm fucking buff, so like I got this unlocked. And I noticed that you could either R2 was drop or R1 was throw. So I just walked over to the edge of the water and just threw this goblin in the water, and he instantly died.
That's awesome.
And I was just so excited about it. And then the rest of the goblins swarmed me, and the guy I was supposed to be following followed the goblins in the water, and then all three of them died. So then I was like, well, I don't, like, the guy just left. I still had, like, the quest marker on my screen, so I was just like, I'll go by myself to the authorities.
I'll turn myself in.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. And so I, like, walk up to the place, and, like, the game is just, like, whatever, and it just, like, continues. Like, I talk to the guy, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's come in here, and we got to do this and that and the other and all this other stuff, and it's been fine since then. Like, the game is a very weird game that I think a lot of people, I bounced off of it when I played the first game way back in the day because I was so like into Dark Souls at the time. And it's people compare it to Dark Souls a lot, but I don't think that there is really a good comparison at all. Like, it doesn't...
Yeah, it's just, they're just both fantasy games.
Yeah, yeah, they're both fantasy games that, like, have kind of a emphasis on careful movement, but that's really where it ends. Like, there's all kinds of weird shit in Dragon's Dogma. Like, you can climb on monsters.
I will probably play it at some point. I didn't want to spend, like, the $70 or whatever for a game that I might bounce off of, but actually, the more I'm hearing and the more people are talking about how there's so much, like, friction in the game. Like, nothing is really easy for you, no matter what you're trying to do.
I have died a lot. I have, yeah. Especially as a mage. Like, I feel like I just need to level up more. But, like, the combat is even with your pawns. Like, I finally have a party. Like, I have an archer and a fighter and another mage that I'm hanging out with. So we got a crew now, and we're doing a little bit better. But, like, when it was just me and my little beast guy that I made, I don't know if I sent you a screenshot of my beast guy. He's horrifying. My little beast guy is a fighter, and it was just me and him. He was doing okay, but, like, there were still some that would come after me. And, like, as a mage, it takes, like, a long time to cast a spell. Like, you've got, like, some quick fire stuff that doesn't do anything, but your heavy artillery, like, you have to incant that shit for a while. So
you gotta mean it.
You gotta mean it, yeah.
You gotta back it up.
The character creator is absolutely hilarious, by the way. Like, that's probably...
When I get to it, just go with it. Just pick something random, because I'll be there all fucking day.
Dude, I downloaded it because they released it early, so you could, like, create your characters, and they were just important to the main game, and I downloaded it, but I never had a chance to mess with it, and I sat there for probably an hour and a half on Sunday.
I'll just get the presets to make Leon. Like, I see 100 screenshots.
There you go. I made my pawn last time. I made my pawn.
Oh,
Sam,
you do have a pretty gnarly beast man with you.
I thought you might like my beast man.
I like your beast man. He looks like he'd be an extra on Merlin. Merlin had tiger men.
I was going to say, he's a cat person, Chris. I don't know that we ever saw cat people on Merlin.
Something about him just gives me Merlin vibes.
He does, and he talks in a very, oh, because all of the pawns call you master, which I'm not really comfortable with, but whatever. It's like, master, what treasure will I find today? I can hardly wait to find out. Like, he's a real excited dude. He's very happy in his life. So
excellent. I'd heard that when you recruit other people's pawns, they do not level up, so you need to make sure you switch those guys out frequently.
That's correct. Yeah. So, I've
read a lot about Dragon's Dogma on Twitter over the last few days. For a game I'm not playing, I've been consuming, like, a lot of information about it.
Found a like a little hidden spot, and it was like a little rift thing, which normally you just use to summon, like, any pawn or whatever, but this one was like a special one, and it was like, either one of two things will happen. You'll get, like, a high level pawn, like, summoned with no cost, or I forget what the second thing was, and I got, like, a level 9 mage, and I was, like, level 6 at the time, so, like, I was like, fuck yeah, hell yeah, let's do this.
Like, you got a bodyguard now.
Yeah, exactly. And immediately, like, looked across and was like, there's a goblin camp with some harpies, let's fucking kill
them. Goblins. Yeah, this you know, I do tend to sometimes bounce off of games like that, and I did with the first one. But when I originally played it on PS3, I actually did play a good portion of it, and then I got stuck somewhere and realized I had to walk all the way back to town. It was going to take an hour, and I just thought, I'm not playing this anymore.
Yeah.
That was before the Dark Arisen thing. But now my problem has been, every time I've tried to play it again on the modern re-release, is I just can't stand the tutorial. You start the game off and you're playing as a high level character, and that part is exciting because you're like with a crew, you got some good gear, you have a bunch of skills, and you go into a battle and it's harrowing and it's exciting and it kind of teaches you how to play. And I feel like then you reset and it's like, okay, now you're just a villager and you're going to create your character. That I'm all fine with. But then it spends the next hour, 2 hours giving you all these different tutorials, and I understand the game has a lot of systems, so they want to teach it to you.
But I'd rather
they just throw me in and let me fucking figure it out, which is kind of what Dark Souls does. Because I just get so bored when they're teaching me. Like, I finally got some pawns or whatever in the first game, went off to go adventure, and they're like, wait, hold up, you got to come over here and talk to this guy and do this thing. I'm like, I don't want to go over there and talk to that guy and do that thing. I just want to go.
I just want to go. Just turn me loose in this world. Like, I just want to jet.
So how's the tutorial in the second one? Is it?
So what happens is, like, whenever you do something, like I talked about picking that goblin up, whenever you do something, it seems to trigger, like, a tutorial, and then you have the option of, like, holding the D-pad down or the touchpad down and opening up, like, the whole tutorial menu where they have everything listed out in, like, menu form, like open world stuff, combat, like, they have it all kind of by sections, but it doesn't,
there's no, like man at the city gates telling you to go pick 3 flowers so that you can show you how gathering works.
No, not really. Like, there was a dude that was like, oh, hey, you need to pick a vocation. And, like, talk to the innkeeper, but, like, small stuff like that. But mostly, for the most part, like, it's just been kind of turning me loose, which has been fun. Like, the first little village had a couple of side quests, and I went and did those, and then was like, okay, we'll progress with the story. And then, like, I went on a little quest to save somebody's brother, and that was pretty fun. And we fought a bunch of goblins and harpies. The harpies are evil. They put you to sleep so easily. It's really annoying.
Bastards.
But, yeah, it seems to turn you loose. Like, it definitely wants to teach you things, and there's a...
Sure. I expect some tutorial, but if it's not super rigid and super...
It doesn't pause the game and, like, stop you from doing stuff. Like, if I had... Like, for instance, like, the guy that told me about the vocation thing, like, it was... The game was very obvious about, you need to talk to such and such at the end before we leave to go to the next, you know, obviously like the next story thing. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go talk to people and find quests. And like, I did that for a while, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to do story stuff. Let's go talk to this dude. I've already got a vocation. I've already chosen skills. Let's rock this. Cool. The one thing
I'm definitely going to check it out in the next couple of weeks.
The one thing I'm really struggling with though is the fucking, and it's every single video game that does it, but it's the weight encumbrance. Cause it has,
oh, I know.
It's just like it doesn't want you to carry a bunch of stuff around, and I want to carry everything around.
Every moment of every second. Well, that didn't make any sense. In Baldur's Gate, I was dealing with that, and it was the worst when I played as like a barbarian and then could carry everything forever because I had a ton of, you know, I was very strong.
Yeah.
And then I was playing as Jess's character, who was a mage or, you know, whatever class it was, and she could carry like 4 items tops. And I'm like, no, that's not how we do this. I got to pump up that strength stat that you absolutely cannot use for any of your skills.
For a single thing, absolutely. Yeah. And Baldur's Gate handles that like relatively well. Like there's tools for like sending stuff to the camp and things like, so
and they've made it so much easier too. They've added things to make it like a one button press, send it to so-and-so, and if somebody's not in your party, you can even still pull it back. They've definitely added a convenience to that, but the principle of the matter is I want to pick everything up.
Yeah. And this, you can like, you can have your pawns carry stuff, which is good. So you like, you can like push material to your pawns so that they're over encumbered if you need to. But you can't really do anything besides that until you get to town. You can combine items. Like it's got a pretty easy combine interface, so you can like create stuff, and that will reduce like your carry weight because you're reducing items. But at the same time, like I am in between average and heavy at all times, not just in real life, but also in this video game.
What is a better system in your opinion? The Dragon's Dogma thing where you pick up stuff and you just get heavier and heavier and heavier and you reach a certain point and you can't run anymore or whatever it is, you're over encumbered, or go like the Breath of the Wild route where your just inventory maxes out.
I feel like it's the difference in people who want like a more sim-like video games. Because I feel like in Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, it's not realistic that my dude is carrying around like 1,000 crystals and 10 Bobakin fangs or whatever. Like it's just not like, if you look at that character on the screen, he's not carrying that inventory, right? Like, and that can in some cases, I think for some people, they want that simulation. They want to be able to see your character carrying the shit, basically. But for me, I don't give a fuck. I'm playing a video game. I want my dude to be able to carry a million pounds at once and just have my pockets overflowing with whatever I need. There is like a chest you can get to at the end, so you can like offload some stuff, and I've been doing that. But like, even then, like I sort my inventory by weight, and like the heaviest things in my inventory are like the shit that I am wearing, and I'm like, well, I can't go naked. So
apparently the camp supplies are reusable. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah. And I made the mistake.
Because I did see somebody complaining that they accidentally like had like 100 of them. They thought it was like a consumable.
I had 3 and was because I thought that they would just consume it, and like, yeah, like they were pretty heavy. So I was like, okay, I'm going to send this to the pawn that I hired, and he'll take it home to somebody. So the pawn system is still very cool. I don't know how much in detail you went to that in the main game and the first game, but like being able to like, you create your pawn, which is your literal slave. It's really fucking weird.
Yeah, sure. I think that they're like a homunculus. They don't have a soul, right?
I mean, the game tells
there's
you that.
There's some more reason. They look like a human, but
the
it's
game
not.
Tells you that. But in every other aspect of their lives, they look and sound like human people, like that have souls. Like they seem to be very like happy, go lucky. Like they're all like, they have problems. They talk to each other.
I'm gonna make like the stereotypical like Igor type of like,
yeah,
it's like I'm a mad scientist and I have my assistant.
The character creator lets you alter your walking gait, so you can actually have like a real hunched over, like I don't know if you can do
like a freaky little guy.
Oh, you can do a freaky little guy, definitely.
Oh, wait, like, I'll make Arthur and I'll make my servant be Merlin.
Oh, that's good stuff. I bet you would get a lot of people recruiting your Merlin guy.
Yeah, I give him a little bowl cut and huge ears. Oh, brother.
I've also heard that if you make your pawn like a huge titty anime chick, like you get a lot of people recruiting her, and you'll get a lot of resources.
Huge titty Merlin.
Huge titty Merlin. There we go. That's exciting for everybody.
I found the Venn diagram. There we go.
Finally.
Okay, so should we go talk about the X-Files? Because otherwise I'm going to start talking about Gundam, and I don't think we want to do that.
We can do that if you need to. Do you want to get it out of your
system? I watched the 1979 Gundam. I started it last year, and I finally finished it the other night. And it is an anime from 1979. It's the oldest anime I've ever watched, and it was basically made to sell toys, but it's still somehow telling this like really engaging like political drama.
I've always heard that about Gundam, and I've always been curious to jump
same,
in.
But I've always just been like, I don't want to watch this old ass show. And then here I am, and I've now started what is like the second canon series, which was it's 1985, so it's you know a couple years have passed, mm-hmm. and it's a Zeta Gundam, and I am like I'm so fucking into it. I am so like it's all I can think about. I'm like, I want to go home and watch more Gundam. Like I've been wrapped into the story of this show.
I love this. I love the fact that you're into the Gundam.
So it's very exciting. I don't think I can. I'll try it at some point, getting into the Gunpla, like the model kits. I really don't think I got that dog in me though.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of patience. I can do puzzles and I can do Legos, but I think that even some of the like the 14 plus Legos, that's a little too much for me.
you see these things on TikTok all the time, but the little like book sized like puzzles that you put together that that light up and have like a little interior thing. So I bought one of those for Autumn for Christmas, and I didn't quite realize how advanced, like we don't do a lot of puzzles or anything, so like we're out of practice, but like we opened it up and we're like, oh, we're gonna need some tweezers. Like this is gonna get like really intense really quickly. So yeah, I totally get the Gundam thing, absolutely. Or the Gunpla.
Yeah, it's one of those
things
where most of my hobbies I share with Jess in some way, shape, or form. Especially if I'm really into something, I'll be like, "Oh, watch this with me, or play this with me, or whatever." And that's just how it generally is. But Gundam, she doesn't have any interest in whatsoever. So I feel like I have to rein it in a little bit.
Yeah, I somehow turned Autumn into a Godzilla fan watching that show that I was telling you
about.
We finished
it.
It ends perfectly. It's great. It's wonderful. But now we've downloaded all of the other movies in the series. Like,
oh yeah, in the Godzilla universe.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and there's all kinds of weird actors that show up in that thing, and like I don't know,
hell
dude.
Yeah.
Like it's fucking crazy. I can't wait to dive into the weird movies.
Thankfully, like half of our Discord is Gundam experts, so I've been relying on them for my conversation. Anyway, no more Godzilla, no more Gundam. Which Godzilla Gundam crossover would be fantastic. Let's talk about the X-Files.
That's an X-Files Gundam Godzilla crossover.
Yep.
Now we're talking.
He thinks that he's researching government technology. Turns out they've made these Gundams. Actually, they created them because they're defeating
Godzilla. Absolutely. Scully is
finds a huge hole, and you think, what's in this huge hole?
Scully is on the Godzilla track. Mulder is on the government conspiracy Gunpla track, right? Like he sees the Smoky Man putting together a model, and it's like, what is that? what do I need to investigate? Fanfic writers, get on this, please. We need to jump into this.
Please.